What would you be saying if you said to God, "Into your hand I commit my spirit"? What would you be saying if you said to God, "Into your hand I commit my spirit"? As we've worked through our Bible reading plan this month, one of the things that we've been looking at together are some of the gifts that you won't find on your Christmas list this year. You probably wouldn't find on anyone's Christmas list this year. In our first study this month, as we listened to the Apostle Paul writing to the Corinthian disciples, we talked about, we thought about the gift of the Old Testament. Then, as we considered Luke's description of Joseph and Mary in the temple just after the birth of Jesus, we thought together about the gift of godly examples. Then, last time we were together, we thought about God's promises in the book of all places, the book of Leviticus, regarding the tent of meeting, that tabernacle, that mobile temple that God had the Hebrews build. We thought about the promises regarding that tent of meeting and the fulfillment of those promises in Jesus. And we rejoiced in the reality of the gift of God's presence. The gift of the Old Testament, the gift of godly examples, the gift of God's presence. But this morning, as we wrap up this series, this way of looking at our reading plan, things we're thinking about, I'd like us to think not about a gift that God has given to us, but about something we can give to God. Of course, as Paul told the Athenians, the true God doesn't live in temples built by people, but take a look here on the screen. Nor is he served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. God doesn't need anything from us, does he? But the fact that God doesn't need anything from us doesn't alter his desire for the very thing we talked about only moments ago. Into your hand I commit my spirit. Into your hand I commit my spirit. Now, do those words sound familiar to you? Into your hand I commit my spirit. Yeah, they are the words of David. They are the words of David. Look with me at Psalm 31. Listen as I read the opening verses of Psalm 31. This is a psalm of David. And we'll start right at the outset there, verse 1. In you, O Lord, Yahweh, the personal name of the God of Israel, in you, Yahweh, do I take refuge. Let me never be put to shame. In your righteousness, deliver me, praise David. Incline your ear to me. Rescue me speedily. Be a rock of refuge for me. Be a strong fortress to save me. For you are my rock and my fortress. And for your name's sake, you lead me and guide me. You take me out of the net they have hidden for me. For you are my refuge. Into your hand I commit my spirit. You have redeemed me, O Yahweh, faithful God. So we might ask again, more specifically, what is David saying when he says to God, "Into your hand I commit my spirit"? What does that mean? Well, I believe there are two elements that we see here in what we just looked at together, I believe there are two elements that can help us understand what David means, his intention for saying this, the intention behind his confession here. First of all, take a look here. David commits his spirit in light of life as difficult, in light of that reality that life is difficult. He commits his spirit. as we should always do, no matter which verse of the Bible we're studying, it's critical, extremely critical, to ask what prompted, what inspired the writing of this verse. And we find a clue in verse 4 to answer that question. It's where David writes, "You take me," talking to God, "you take me out of the net they have hidden for me." Ooh, wow. Who are the they that David is referencing here? We don't know. We have no idea who he's talking about. What we do know is that David will go on in this psalm to tell us more about his opponents. Look at verse 13. "For I hear the whispering of many, terror on every side," says David, "as they scheme together against me, as they plot to take my life." This is serious, isn't it? This is not a first world problem. This is not just a hiccup or a minor speed bump. This is somebody plotting to kill David. Terror on every side. Verse 20, he speaks again of the plots of men. He talks about the strife of tongues. David was facing this danger, and that hard reality helps us better understand this statement in verse 5, where he says, "Into your hand I commit my spirit." But the bigger picture, he wouldn't say that unless, second, take a look, number two, David commits his spirit in light of God as refuge. In light of the reality of God as refuge, David commits his spirit to God. The overall theme of the psalm is, in fact, that refuge. It's right there, that single word from verse 1. But we find it throughout the psalm. Verse 1, refuge. Verse 2, rock of refuge. Verse 2, strong fortress. Verse 3, rock and fortress again. Verse 4, refuge. Verse 19, refuge. Verse 20, in the cover of your presence you hide them. Verse 20, you store them in your shelter. Verse 23, Yahweh preserves the faithful. You can't miss it. Even if he doesn't use the word refuge, he's talking about God being a shelter. In the very next psalm, David will say, "You are my hiding place." Another way to say it. But it's the same theme over and over again. In the face of life's difficulties, in the face of painful people and scary circumstances, David knew where he could go to find safety. He knew where to run. He found refuge. He found shelter, protection, safety in God. This is why he confesses so clearly in verse 5, "Into your hand I commit my spirit." Let's break down a couple of those words, just so we know what we're dealing with here. What does he mean by spirit? Well, like the Greek word, the Greek synonym, this Hebrew word, it's a fun word to say, because you got to get that real guttural sound at the end. It's ruach, ruach, ruach. Yeah, don't you love that? It's like, oh, wow, that's crazy. That word, ruach, it's often translated wind throughout the Psalms. In fact, it might be translated as wind more than any other word in the book of Psalms, the collection of the Psalms. But throughout, we also find references that use this ruach, this breath, this wind, to refer to the spirit of a man in the sense it's your innermost person. Therefore, it's synonymous with the Hebrew word for heart, one's heart. So that's one way to understand the idea of one's spirit. It's that your innermost person, that core self, like the word heart might refer to. But at other times, it's referring to the breath of life. A couple words in Genesis translate this, synonymous phrases, but where you find it most is in the account of Noah building the ark. And what does God say he's going to do in judgment upon the earth? He's going to wipe out everything in which is what? The breath of life, right? The breath of life is in there. This is that word, ruach. So in some sense, when David talks about his spirit, he's talking about his life. His life itself, his very existence. Therefore, people are planning to kill him in the face of death. What is David doing? He's committing his life, his spirit to God. Okay, how about the word commit? Right? What does he mean by the word commit? I think a more helpful translation, even though I think commit's good, I love the idea of to entrust. You could clearly translate this word that same way, to entrust. If you had something really precious, something really valuable, and you couldn't take it on an airplane, or you couldn't have it for some time, do you have someone you would entrust that item to? Do you have someone in your life that you could commit it into their hands, commit it into their safekeeping? To entrust is a beautiful picture, this idea. Into your hands, says David, I entrust my spirit. He could have been tempted by so many other things. He could have been tempted to do so many other things. With his military prowess, a guy like David could have been tempted, maybe was tempted, to trust in his strength to defeat these enemies. He may have been tempted to trust in material wealth to pay off his enemies. He may have been tempted to trust in shrewd negotiating and compromise with these opponents of his. Or he simply may have lost himself in fear and anxiety. But he didn't do any of those things. David had learned over many years, from the time he was a boy, as he told it, that God was good, God was powerful, and God was trustworthy. God was good. God was powerful and God was trustworthy. And therefore, he could be trusted with David's very life. David could commit his life into God's hands for his safekeeping, and God would come through. He had done it time and time again. As David would go on six Psalms later, take a look. He says this, commit your way and trust your way to Yahweh. Trust in him and he will act. Put it in his hand, says David. And David had rejoiced earlier in Psalm 10. To you the helpless, key word, helpless, commits or entrusts himself. Verse 14 of chapter of Psalm 10. So I think what we see here in Psalm 31, verse 5, in light of the context, is that, take a look at this summary statement, to commit your spirit into God's hand is to entrust your very life to him, believing that he is willing and able to shelter and preserve you through even the hardest storms. Whatever you're facing, he is able to do that. Now, clearly that conclusion is relevant to us as well. I know that resonates with you when you hear that. I know it stirs you. We recognize, like David, life is difficult. We face danger. We face disease. We face debt. We face despair. And ultimately we face death, don't we? But even more important, if we recognize those things, we recognize that fact about the difficulty of life, do we also recognize that God is a refuge? I put it to you, brother or sister, even now, how is God your refuge this morning? How is God your refuge this morning? How do you feel secure, safe, protected by him specifically, directly, deliberately this morning? Each and every day, you and I are tempted to take refuge from the storms of life. And there are lots of storms, aren't there? Storms outside, storms inside. Life is hard. We are tempted, though, to take refuge from the storms of life in all sorts of other places. I know that you can think of them as well. In money, in comfort, in pleasure, in media, in the opinion of others, in novelty, in busyness, in romance, in drugs or alcohol or food or gambling, in our cleverness and our competency, in our degrees and careers, in self-help, self-righteousness, self-esteem, and in so many other causes that are anything but ultimate and anything but eternally secure. Now, while some of these examples are good and helpful things, when we try to take spirit-entrusting refuge, when we try to take spirit-committing refuge in such things, it's like running into a grass hut to find refuge from a Category 5 hurricane with sustained winds of at least 157 miles per hour. That's what it's like. Such things simply cannot protect us from the severity of what we're facing. But we know who can. We know that God can. And the reassurance that we need is found in the very one who, with his dying breaths, repeated these words of David. He took his ancestors' words upon his lips. When I asked you earlier if you recognize the words, "Into your hand I commit my spirit," you may have recognized them as you shook your head, but you didn't recognize them as the words of David. You recognize them as the words of Jesus. Take a look here. The Gospel of Luke, 23rd chapter, verse 46. This is what Luke records about Christ's final moments on the cross. "Then Jesus, calling out with a loud voice, said, 'Father, into your hands I commit my spirit.' And having said this, he breathed his last." Now, before I say anything else, let me just throw in, it's not in my notes, but it should have been. I meant it to be. I forgot it, though. Think about what's just been stated there. What does it remind us about Jesus? What does it remind us of about his death? It reminds us of the fact that Jesus' life was not taken from him. He laid it down of his own accord. He gave up his life. And he did that for you. For me. He said, "Father, into your hand I commit my spirit," and he was gone. That was it. Now, many are familiar with the fact that Jesus quoted the Psalms on the cross, but they might be thinking of what took place probably just minutes before this. You might be thinking of Psalm 22, where Jesus cried out, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" An expression of his anguish. But many are unaware of the fact that only moments later, Jesus again took those words of David, his great-great-great-great-grandfather, when he quoted Psalm 31, not as an expression of anguish, but an expression of trust, of confidence in God. There could be no better words. As he entrusted his life to God. But you might say, okay, but God didn't preserve Jesus. God didn't preserve Jesus. The Son put his life into the Father's hands, but he died seconds later. How was God a refuge for him if he faced the storm of death and was consumed? Well, as many of you know, not long before this, only a few verses earlier in Luke 23, Jesus answers the faith-inspired request of one of the crucified criminals with him there. He answered with these words, "Truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." You see, though his physical life came to an end, the spirit of the man Jesus was safe and secure in the hands of God the moment his physical life in this world expired. His life was safe. His spirit was safe and secure in the hands of God. And as most of you know, on the third day, Jesus emerged from the tomb, proving that his faith in God had not been in vain. This is what the Apostle Peter reminds us about all of Christ's passion, all of his suffering. He said this, "When he, Jesus, was reviled by the Jews, by the Roman guards, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but he continued to do what? He continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. He continued to commit his life into God's hands and said, my destiny, my fate, my vindication, my redemption is in your hand. I trust you, Father. Like Jesus, and because of Jesus, only because of Jesus, you and I can trust God as our ultimate refuge. I hope you know that this morning. Maybe you need that reminder this morning that you can trust God as your ultimate refuge. Whether we are facing death, and I hope that's not true of any of you in an imminent sense today. All of us are on that path, of course. Or if there's some other danger in your life, any danger you're facing, whether it be physical, whether it be emotional, whether it be financial, whether it be relational, whether it be vocational, whether it be spiritual, a spiritual danger, we can and we should cry out as well, into your hand I commit my spirits. That should be our instinct, the spiritual reflex of our hearts. Into your hand I commit my spirit. So stop for a moment and think about what storm or storms you are presently facing. What has you worried this morning? What is tempting you to fear this morning? What feels overwhelming to you this morning? What is it that has inspired you to push up your walls just a little bit higher this morning? Whatever it is, and whatever grass hut you're tempted to take refuge in, please cry out to God instead. Cry out to him again and again, into your hand I commit my spirit. I know that like David, for so many of you, you can look back and you can say, I have seen the faithfulness of God over and over again in my life. He has proven it to me beyond the shadow of a doubt that he is good, powerful, and trustworthy. I'm just forgetting it right now. I'm just blindsided by these things. It's just murky for me right now. I say again, you can cry out to him again, into your hand I commit my spirit. I say again, ultimately, because if you belong to Jesus Christ this morning, if you call yourself a Christian, if you believe yourself to be a genuine follower of Jesus, a disciple of Jesus, by grace, through faith, because of his death and resurrection, if that's you, then you've already made this confession. You've already made this confession, because what is saving faith if it isn't this kind of entrusting? What is it if it's not this kind of entrusting? Into your hand, I commit my spirit. Isn't that saving faith? Doesn't somebody have to, in essence, say something like that to actually be born again, to be changed, to be transformed, to receive the gift of eternal life? Into your hand, I commit my spirit, my life, my heart, my health, my bank account, my family, my marriage, my possessions, my past, my future, my everything. And they dropped their nets and they left their father and the boats and they followed him. Everything. They left it all. They gave it all into his hands. It was Jesus who earlier in Luke, this same gospel, told his listeners, take a look, for whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses, not accidentally like, I've lost my keys, where are they? No, but deliberately loses his or her life. Whoever offers up his or her life, whoever surrenders his or her life for my sake will save it, says Jesus. Luke 9:24. And that pattern of trust and entrusting, trust and entrusting, trust and entrusting should characterize your entire Christian life. You trust him and you continue to entrust everything into his hands. You entrust your life and your future into His capable hands, His strong hands, His good, powerful, and trustworthy hands. Isn't this what the Apostle Peter and the Apostle Paul are describing in the following verses? Peter says, "Therefore, brothers and sisters, let those who suffer according to God's will do what? Entrust their souls. Entrust their souls to a faithful Creator while doing good." I know you want to fight back at times. I know you're tempted to eye for an eye, tit for tat, like just lash out when you're suffering. But trust that God has you. And even if you should die, trust that your soul is safe in His hands. He will never leave you or forsake you. He will never abandon you. He is true to His promises. And then Paul wrote this, "That is why I am suffering as I am," he writes to Timothy. "Yet this is no cause for shame, my suffering, my imprisonment, because I know whom I have believed, and I am convinced that He is able to guard what I have entrusted to Him until that day." Paul's not specific there, but I think the flow and the context of that chapter points to the fact that it's his life. It's his very life that he's entrusted to God. He's willing to suffer because he knows that God has got him. This Christmas, God does not need a gift from you. But because of his rich mercy and his astonishing love, his deep desire is that you would offer up to him and to continue to offer up to him your very life, everything. Let's be done with this idea that, oh, I got saved when I was this age. And we're always thinking back to that moment. I prayed a prayer, I wrote on a card, I made a decision. And let's focus on today. Today. You might have prayed a prayer when you were 10. You might have prayed a prayer in college. But are you praying today in faith? Are you trusting Him today with everything, your whole life? How are you finding refuge in Him today? Let the gift tag read, "To God from you." To God from you. As you face that hardship, pray, "Into your hands I entrust my life." As you face that heartache, pray, "Into your hands I entrust my life." As you face those distractions and those diversions and those notifications, bing, and the earthly calls to action all around, as you face temptations, pray, "Into your hands I entrust my life." Not grass huts. Not any other thing. God gave you the greatest gift He could give you at Christmas. He gave you the greatest gift He could give you. The only right response is for you to give Him the greatest gift you can give Him, and that is your very life. Your very soul. I promise you, you will never regret giving Him that. Never. You will never regret what we might call the gift of an offered life. The gift of an offered life. He is good. He is powerful. He is trustworthy. So in light of God's grace, in light of God as refuge, may trust and entrust, trust and entrusting be words that characterize us. Amen? That they would characterize us in every aspect of our lives, and not just during the holiday season, but every single day of the year. Let's pray. Would you pray with me?